ripped where the glass had rained down on him, his form silhouetted against the flames. "Burke!" she called, and waved her arms at him. The snow was coming down heavily, heavily enough to impede her vision, but not enough to quench the fire already roaring through the new house, tearing through wood, toppling stone, greedily gobbling up everything in its path. Jacobean chests and Sheridan chairs and Gobelins tapestries, portraits and figurines and drapes. "One more!" shouted Burke back, and turned back to the open window, holding out his hand. "All right, Mrs. Van Dyvel, your turn." Janie could see her mother in the window, her black silk dress reflecting the glow of the flames, her faded blonde hair glowing gold again in the light. But she didn't take Burke's hand. "Mrs. Van Dyvel!" Burke's voice was barely audible above the flames and the wind. Janie saw how his arm quivered as he stretched it out to Mrs. Van Dyvel, his face turned away from the punishing glare. "Mother!" screamed Janie, but her voice was lost in the sound of cracking glass and crumbling masonry. She was crying, she realized, the tears mingling with the soot and the snow. "Mother!" Her mother looked down at Burke's outstretched hand. Her lips moved in words Janie couldn't hear. For a moment, Janie's mother stood black and gold against the casement window, jet beads glittering. And then she turned, and without another word, disappeared into the flames. Chapter 28. New York, 1899. February 11th. They huddled in the kitchen of the old house, clustered around a hastily kindled fire, clutching cups of sugar, lightly touched with tea. They had staggered in, bruised and soot-covered, Sebastian coughing, his nurse panicking, Mrs. Van Dyvel's maid dissolving into paroxysms of grief, although it was unclear from what Janie could make out whether her laments were for the loss of her mistress or her position. Mrs. Garrett took charge, ordering about staff and guests alike. Fires were lit, water was boiled, and Sebastian was set to breathe a scented smoke that quieted his coughs to whimpers against his nurse's chest. One by one they were summoned to the kitchen pump, scrubbed clean with freezing water, their wounds slathered with evil-smelling salves. Mrs. Garrett, like a conjurer, unearthed clothes from Janie's grandmother's trunks, old-fashioned trousers and shirts, full-skirted dresses with tight basques from her grandmother's youth, children's smocks that must have belonged to Janie's father, if not her grandfather. Sebastian clung close to his nurse, but Viola careened about like a toy that had been wound to breaking, peppering everyone with questions, demanding to know why the sky was red, what had happened to the house, where was grandmother? Did this mean they could live at home again? Viola's questions fell like pebbles striking her skin, only half felt. It was, of all people, Giles Lacey who stumbled through answers to Viola's questions, clearing his throat and looking to Janie for help, for answers she couldn't give. "I would kill her again if I could." Her mother's voice rang in Janie's ears, brazen, half-crazed. Outside, the fire still raged, eating away at the mortar binding the new house together. The crackle of the flames, the clatter of stones tumbling down, punctuated the night, making the survivors in the kitchen jump and wince. Sebastian's nurse, as dazed and hollow-eyed as the rest of them, her arm wrapped in a makeshift bandage, nuzzled Sebastian's barley-floss head. "The wee ones should be in bed." "There are still beds in the nursery, aren't there?" said Anne. She swung a protesting Viola up in her arms. "Has anyone lit a fire?"
"Garrett saw to it," said Mrs. Garrett matter-of-factly, as if midnight evacuations happened in the normal course of things. She moved about the familiar kitchen as though she had never left it, the old house already humming to her tune.
"There's clean linen in the airing cupboard. Clean nightdresses, too."
Janie hauled herself out of her chair. It wasn't just her legs that felt numb. It was all of her. She felt as though she were trapped in those few minutes just before the house went up in flames,
living them over and over and over again. She made me do it. I would kill her again.
I'll go. Anne turned with Viola on her hip. Stay here. Drink tea. I'll settle these creatures.
I am not a creature, said Viola with dignity. I am Viola Van Dyvel.
Janie's throat contracted. Viola might look like Annabelle, Georgie, but she sounded so like Bay.
Are you? Then act like it.
Anne stared at Viola until Viola ducked her head, squirming herself into a more comfortable place against Anne's shoulder, one strong will bowing to another.
If you're good, I'll sing you a lullaby.
Viola lifted her head.
I don't want a lullaby. I want a story.
Even better. I have a wonderful one about a prince who turned into a toad. You'll adore it. It's very educational.
Anne and her charge disappeared up the back stair, the nurse following more slowly behind with Sebastian.
Well?
Said Mrs. Garrett, putting her hands on her hips and surveying the three who remained.
Do you mean to sit here all night? If you're not going to help, stop cluttering up my kitchen. There's a fire in the drawing room. I'll fetch you once I've got your rooms ready.
I think we've been dismissed, said Burke quietly.
He helped Janie up from her chair.
Don't gawp, Lacey. Come along.
Giles Lacey glared back over his shoulder as Burke ferried them from the room.
You let your housekeeper speak to you like that?
She's not my housekeeper, said Janie, feeling very far away from her own body, as though her head were floating disconnected above the floor.
Giles Lacey shook his head and muttered, I need a drink. Do you have brandy in this godforsaken wasteland?
Given that the air was blasted with ash and snow, Janie didn't feel she could contest his description.
There should be a decanter in the dining room.
My thanks.
Giles Lacey nodded at Janie and, ignoring Burke, veered off in search of liquid consolation.
You might do with some of that brandy.
Burke stood aside to let Janie precede him into the drawing room, but she noticed that he stayed close. Wordlessly, Janie shook her head.
Mrs. Garrett has left us tea.
A remedy for any ill. There was a chipped teapot in her grandmother's pattern on a tray by the fire, 5 cups, and a large bowl of sugar. No candles had been lit. None were needed. The drawing room faced south, where the bonfire that had once been Bay's home blazed like 1,000 candles, infusing the room with a lurid glare. Janie crossed to the window.
Will it spread?
She had never been so conscious of the vulnerability of her surroundings, mere planks and boards separating her from the elements, rather like reputation, which seemed so strong until it was lost.
The snow is falling again.
She felt, rather than saw, Burke come to stand beside her. He lowered his head, rubbing his temples.
Christ, I never thought I'd be so glad to see snow. Let's just hope the wind stays in the other quarter and the snow keeps falling.
He lifted his head just as Janie turned from the window, and she found herself staring at him as if she were memorizing him, every detail unnaturally sharp. From the sheen on his hair, still damp from the snow water in which he had washed it, to the burn mark by his left brow. He had a sticking plaster on his forehead and another on his cheek where he had been struck by flying glass. The coat he wore was Janie's grandfather's, and far too big for him. The front hung loose and the sleeves had been rolled and rolled again. Janie's grandfather had been a large man, tall and broad, the latter exacerbated by her grandmother's skill with pastry. He would have made 2 of Burke. Janie tried to focus on those sorts of thoughts, on Burke's rolled sleeves, her grandmother's pies. It was better than the other images that came up when she closed her eyes. Her mother, dissolving into flame. Bay lying lost and cold on the floor of the folly. Annabelle sinking slowly into the river. The endless roar of the fire, turning the sky crimson and black. The clothes she wore smelled of lavender and age, but Janie could still smell the reek of soot beneath it, in her hair, in her skin, beneath her nails, ground right down to her core. The soot of her mother's pyre.
"How long can it burn?"
she blurted out. "Days." Burke's eyes were red and impossibly weary. Janie remembered vaguely that Burke had walked 2 miles from the station. It seemed like a lifetime ago. An hour ago was a lifetime ago. "But the snow should damp it."
"So you said."
Flames shooting out of the window, her mother's lips moving.
"What did my mother say to you at the end?"
Burke blinked and shifted from one foot to the other.
"It was hard to tell. The wind..."
"No."
Janie put her hand on his sleeve, forcing him to look at her.
"I want to know."
"It sounded like..."
Burke's lips quirked in something out of an actor's mask, half comic, half tragic.
"It sounded like, if you publish this, I will haunt you."
A harsh laugh burbled out of Janie's throat, and then another one, and another one.
No words of love, no, not for her mother. No contrition, no apologies, just a posthumous attempt to protect her reputation.
It was suddenly hysterically funny, her mother in a bedsheet flitting about Burke's window, sabotaging the printing presses, spooking the horses that carried the papers. Her stomach ached with laughing, except that it wasn't laughter anymore. Sobs pushed out of her, great heaving sobs, bending her double, mixing and mingling with the laughter as tears ran down her face, seeping through her fingers, wetting the bodice of her grandmother's dress. Janie could feel Burke's arms around her, his hand stroking her hair, his voice murmuring over and over, "I'm sorry. I'm so sorry."
"I'm not."
The words came out harsh and raw. Janie shoved the hair out of her eyes, blinking at Burke, her throat aching, her chest aching, all of her aching.
"Is that horrible? I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry she's gone. If anything, I'm... relieved."
Janie could feel it like the lifting of a storm. She had never imagined that her mother might have hurt Bay. Some part at the back of Janie's mind mocked her for the euphemism. But her mother's tension had pressed through the house, infecting them all. She had felt her madness, even if she hadn't recognized it for what it was. It was dreadful, all of it, and she knew that at some point the full horror of it would hit her. But right now, all she could feel was a horrible sense of relief that her mother was gone.
"It's as if she was haunting us already, crushing all the life out of us one by one. And now she's gone and we can breathe again."
Janie looked up at Burke, trying to put her feelings into words.
"Now is where you're meant to be shocked and appalled."
"You forget, I met your mother," said Burke dryly.
He looked into Janie's eyes, his voice softening.
"She didn't give you much reason to love her, did she?"
Janie gave a laugh that turned into a hiccup. She put a hand to her mouth.
"My mother was charming,"
she said in a muffled voice.
"That's what everyone says. But I never saw it. She never wasted her charm on me."
Silently, Burke put an arm around her shoulders, drawing her close. Janie leaned into the comfort of that arm, the words spilling out.
"She didn't bother to charm my father, either, not after she had caught him. The only one she cared about was Bay. I think she saw him as the man she might have been, or perhaps as the man she wanted my father to be. Does that sound mad?"
"No," said Burke. "No, it doesn't."
But Janie hardly heard him. She was lost in the tangled web of her own thoughts, thoughts that had always been there, but that she had never dared to voice.
"With my mother, it always came back to my mother."
There had been portraits of Mrs. Van Dyvel everywhere, larger-than-life full-length portraits in the reception rooms at Newport, greeting visitors from the top of the stairs at the house on 36th Street. Portraits of ancestors had been relegated to dark corners, shunted off to relatives. Only Alva Van Dyvel was allowed to shine. Her whole world was a mirror. Nothing existed except in relation to her.
"Even her daughter?" said Burke quietly.
"Especially her daughter." Janie's fingers tightened on the lapels of Burke's jacket. Killing Bay, it must have driven her mad, as if she had taken a knife to herself. She wasn't just killing Bay, she was killing her own legacy with it. It's like something out of Sophocles, but the curtain doesn't go up at the end.
Burke's eyes flickered towards the window, where Illyria burned still, and Janie's mother with it. She took her punishment, for what it's worth.
Janie thought of her mother standing in the window, lit by the flames. Reluctantly, she shook her head. I don't know whether it was punishment or pride. If we hadn't discovered the truth, would she have gone on like that? Could she?
Burke didn't feed her soothing lies. I don't know. Now that she had started talking, Janie couldn't seem to stop.
Do you know, I was jealous of Bay. Everything was so easy for him. He seemed to have a talent for always doing what was expected of him. Until Annabel.
Janie winced.
Georgiana, I mean, whoever she was. I'd never thought that Bay might be running away. I'd never thought that he'd had anything to run from. I'm not making much sense, am I?
You've just been through hell, said Burke roughly. I'd say you're making more sense than you should.
Should I have hysterics like Gregson and be sent off to bed with a belly full of laudanum?
All those years of tisanes to calm her nerves. Her nerves had never needed calming, not like that. But it had been a convenient excuse for her mother, a way to shunt her out of sight, keep her under control. Janie could hear her own voice, higher and higher, faster and faster, the words spilling out before she could think better of them.
I think I thought that if I could find out who killed Bay, my mother might finally look at me. She might think I wasn't such a disappointment. I told myself it was for Bay, or for Bay's children, but really it was for me. All those grand pronouncements about truth. How could you stand to listen to me? That wasn't what I wanted. All I wanted was for my mother to notice me.
Hush. Burke reached out to stroke her hair, and Janie jerked away, a jangle of raw nerves, jumpy in her own skin. Do you think anyone's motives are pure? Just because you wanted your mother's attention doesn't mean
that I'm not St. Genevieve.
Janie swiped at her eyes. She gestured wildly at the window.
I lit a larger candle than I intended, didn't I? So much for lighting the world. I burned it down instead.
Burke grasped her shoulders with both hands. Janie, Janie, listen to me. Look at me. That chimney would have exploded no matter what you did.
But would my mother have chosen to—
She couldn't make her lips form around the words.
She's dead, and I can never make it better now.
She killed her son. Burke held tightly to her shoulders, holding her gaze with his own, speaking rapidly. Can you imagine having to relive that moment over and over? She said it herself. She took the only way out she could. Janie, it wasn't your doing, any of it. Just a little cog on the wheel of events beyond her control. Janie choked on a laugh.
I don't know if that makes it better or worse.
What do you want me to tell you? Burke's voice broke, and Janie realized with a shock that he was on the verge of cracking. You did what you had to do, and you had the guts to see it through. You want expiation? Talk to a priest. He gave her a little shake. You're the strongest woman I know, Janie Van Dyvel. Don't go wobbly on me now.
Is that what you say on all your condolence calls?
Quipped Janie shakily. Burke's arms closed convulsively around her, squeezing her tight. I've been so afraid, he muttered into her hair. This morning when I learned about Lacey, I thought—
I know,
murmured Janie, burrowing into his shirt front,
her arms beneath his coat locked around his waist.
Burke was still talking, his cheek against her brow, half in a dream.
I was so terrified that I was going to lose you, that I was never going to get a chance to tell you I love you.
Love? Me?
Janie pulled back, staring at him, and saw the look of alarm cross Burke's face as he realized what he had said.
You love me?
I didn't mean to... It's a hell of a time to say it, isn't it? I wasn't going to.
He drew in a deep breath. Janie could feel it reverberating through her own lungs. His green eyes held hers defiantly.
But it's true. I love you. I shouldn't, and I can't, but I do.
The fire cast an orange light across his skin. Janie didn't know whether to laugh or cry.
You're right. It is a hell of a time.
Words she never thought would come out of her mouth. But she was different now. They were all different.
Burke, never mind.
Burke let go of her and took a step back, holding up both hands.
It's all right. You should go to bed. I should go to bed. Different beds, he added quickly. This never happened. We can pretend I never said anything.
Janie took a step forward.
Burke?
Burke's Adam's apple bobbed up and down.
Yes?
Stop talking,
said Janie, and kissed him. There was nothing romantic or tender about it. She kissed him desperately, kissed him with all the grief and fear and longing coursing through her. She kissed him as the fire crackled and the stones of Illyria fell. Let Rome in Tiber melt. But she wasn't melting. She was burning, burning where the stubble on his chin grazed her palm, burning where his hands pressed against her back, all the pain and doubt burning up and away in the fire of their touch, frantic, animal, alive.
Ahem.
The sound of a man loudly clearing his throat made them jump apart, Janie's hand against her swollen lips, Burke running a hand through his wildly disordered hair. Giles Lacey swaggered into the room, lifting one of Janie's grandmother's precious Irish crystal goblets in a casual salute.
"Your Gorgon sent me to tell you she has rooms for us."
He swirled the ruby liquid in his glass and frowned accusingly at Janie.
"That cherry brandy in the dining room is appalling stuff."
Janie repressed the urge to kick Mr. Lacey in the shin, if only to take the smirk off his face.
"That's because it's not cherry brandy," she said shortly. "It's my grandmother's raspberry cordial."
"Whatever it is, it tastes like summer pudding gone wrong."
"That doesn't seem to have stopped you."
Burke kept a protective arm around Janie's shoulder.
"We all have different means of... escape."
Lacey raised a brow at the location of Burke's arm.
"Don't want to intrude, but we'd best get our story straight, eh, what? Convenient having a journalist on hand. How long does it take you to get a story out? Never mind, don't tell me. As I see it, you tell them about the chimney and leave out the rest. Rest. Tragic fire, etc., etc."
"By the rest," said Burke slowly, "you mean Mrs. Van Dyvel's confession?"
"If you can call it that. Just the ramblings of an old lady, eh? Lost her mind with grief. Could happen to anyone."
Giles Lacey gestured widely, slopping raspberry cordial on the carpet.
"Georgie's good as done it, didn't she? No need to muddy the waters."
Burke looked at Janie, his expression troubled.
"He has a point, you know. We only have your mother's word."
"And her brooch?"
The portrait that proved it had burned was burning even now, but there might be sketches, copies. Copies the police would never find unless someone drew them to official attention.
"A brooch is a very silent witness, isn't it?"
"If you wanted..."
Burke began, and broke off.
"You can't make yourself say it."
Janie knew what he was offering her, the ability to wave a magic wand and make it all go away. But it wouldn't, would it? Bay was still dead, and the twins deserved to know the truth.
if I wanted you to lie.
Not lie, exactly. Just leave out the bit where the old bat started raving.
Mr. Lacey winked broadly and staggered a bit with the exertion. He was, Janie realized, very drunk indeed. To Burke, he added,
You'll be paid, of course. Sure, you can make a good thing of it. Grieving mother dies in flames, murderess still missing, you know, the sort of thing. Make your editor happy and get a bit on the side.
Janie ignored him. She turned to Burke.
Would you do that?
Not for money, and not for him.
Burke jammed his hands deep in his pockets. There was honor even among journalists, he had told her once.
Is it what you want?
Save her mother's reputation and destroy Burke's soul? No, not just Burke. Annabelle and her children and Bay and everyone else who had been touched by this. Janie's nails made crescents in her palms.
No, she said fiercely. We've had enough secrets and lies. The children need to know their mother wasn't a murderess. We owe it to them. And to Annabelle.
She wasn't,
began Giles Lacey, and Janie turned on him.
She was Annabelle to us. She was Bay's wife.
Janie was shaking, with reaction and fatigue and anger and goodness only knew what else.
I want the children to remember their mother with love. She loved them. They deserve that.
You don't have to bite my head off, Giles muttered. It was only a suggestion.
As an apology, Janie felt that lacked something. She advanced on Giles, one finger outstretched.
I don't care what feuds you brought with you from England. You can take them back there with you. I'm telling the truth as I know it, whether it suits you or not. And you can go drink raspberry cordial until your teeth rot.
Behind her, Burke choked on a laugh. Janie whirled to face him.
As for you, Mr. Burke.
Yes,
he said, and his voice was so tender that any tart words Janie might have uttered faltered on her tongue.
I love you.
Janie met Burke's eyes levelly.
As a good man once told me, do what you have to do and have the guts to see it through. Go back to town. Write your story. Tell the truth and shame the devil.
Language, muttered Giles Lacey, and upended his glass. You sound like your grandmother, said Mrs. Garrett from the doorway. She was a good woman. Nothing mealy-mouthed about her. Good hand with a pie crust, too.
Burke banged his elbow on the window frame. Giles Lacey dropped his glass, spraying the last few droplets of raspberry cordial across the carpet.
That's enough of that, said Mrs. Garrett. Are you all going to bed, or do I have to carry you up?
Chapter 29. New York, February, 1899. For 3 days the papers were crammed with reports of people frozen in their homes, ice floes in southern waters, walls of snow in the nation's capital. Never had there been a storm like it, pummeling the country from New Orleans to Vermont. And on the banks of the Hudson, Illyria lay in ruins, a heap of smoldering masonry, half walls and blackened chimney, gutted window frames, and sparkling shards of glass. Firemen and police climbed over the remains, but there was little they could do. Soot crept beneath the windowsills of the old house, tarring the woodwork, giving Janie a constant cough. The reek of smoke permeated everything. As soon as they were able, Janie and Anne packed up the twins and fled back to the house on 36th Street. Word of Alva Van Dyvel's death had preceded them. A pile of black-bordered notes of condolence had been delivered by footmen sloshing their way through the slush in the streets, climbing over the mounds of snow that had frozen hard at the street corner, black with coal smoke. Only a handful of reporters ventured through the slush to wait at the gate. A death by fire, while a gratifyingly tragic capstone to a major story, was hardly front-page news compared to cattle freezing in the fields in Virginia. "The doom of the Van Dyvels?" mused the journal, concocting an arresting but entirely fictitious tale of dubious 17th-century land deals and Indian curses, but their ruminations were limited to the lower half of an inside page. Janie and Anne rolled up their sleeves and set about making arrangements for Mrs. Van Dyvel's funeral. Anne was, much to Janie's surprise, a pillar of strength in crisis. A slightly cracked and crooked pillar, but a pillar all the same, fierce in public and blunt in private. In its own way, that was the most helpful of all, not having to pretend with Anne. It was exhausting enough dealing with the emotions she did feel without having to pretend to the ones she didn't. Anne bullied the rector and the undertaker, poured sherry into Mr. Tilden until he dispersed the necessary funds, and wrote response after response to the notes of condolence that piled higher every day, as every socialite and social climber, every 16th cousin 15 times removed, paid their respects to the late, great Alva Van Dyvel. She was mad. That was Anne's verdict, delivered in private in those dark hours of the evening when the children were in bed, and Janie and Anne sat together in the grim drawing-room that had been her mother's domain. "Is that the time? You can sit up if you like. I'm going to bed." But was she mad? There was something comforting about Anne's blunt summation, as if the madness were something separate from her mother, something that had taken over her hand and directed her knife. But Janie wasn't so sure. It didn't matter. It was over now. Janie tried to get her head around it all, and found she couldn't quite. The coroner's court had met and declared a verdict of unnatural death by person or persons unknown. The press, with other, fresher stories to chase, dropped away. Giles Lacey booked passage to England. And Burke. "Do what you have to do," Janie had told him. And he did. On the Wednesday following the storm, Burke's article appeared in bold black letters on the front page of the News of the World. And the world turned upside down. Curiosity seekers shimmied up lampposts to try to peer through windows. Second cousins suddenly contracted mysterious illnesses that rendered them unfit to perform their duties as pallbearers. "Did she do it, Miss Van Dyvel? Did you see it?" They ran a gauntlet from the church, the police pushing back the crowds, making way for the mourners, such as they were. The pews at Trinity Church were all but empty. A few elderly relatives, who either didn't know or didn't care, came to pay their respects. But her mother's court was missing. Mrs. Astor discovered another obligation, and the rest of the world followed. "There is some justice in the world." Anne pushed back her veil and leaned back against the black velvet squabs, as black-plumed horses carried them away from Trinity Church towards Greenwood Cemetery in Brooklyn. There might be no body to bury, but the formalities were being observed all the same. "Aunt Alva must have been furious to see her funeral so ill-attended. Even those upstart Vanderbilts stayed away." Janie bit her lip to hide a smile. It wasn't funny, not really. But she admired Anne's nerve. "I wish—" she began, and stopped. Anne, while a rock when it came to dealing with grieving children, had balked all attempts to discuss what had happened at Elyria. "I wish I knew what she was thinking." Her cousin looked out the window, her face sober. "I used to admire her, you know. I thought if I married Teddy I could be what she was. Only more beautiful and brilliant, of course." Anne looked back at her, and Janie was surprised to see a hesitancy there. "Did you mind about Teddy?" "I minded Mother minding," said Janie honestly. "But other than that, no. I rather liked Teddy once." The wistful note in Anne's voice made Janie look at her in surprise. Anne shrugged, tossing her head so that her jet earrings danced. "Or might have, if he had given me the chance. He only married me because his mother didn't want him to." "You had that in common, then," said Janie dryly. Anne snorted in appreciation. "Aunt Alva would have loved to see me end my days in dreary spinsterdom, dressed in sackcloth and winding wool. It gave me such joy to disappoint her." She glanced sideways at Janie. She never did forgive my father for proposing to my mother instead of her.
But I'd thought that my father was a horrible parvenu with more money than taste.
Janie winced at Anne's accurate imitation of Mrs. Van Dyvel. He was. He was also madly attractive. Charisma, I think they call it. Your mother wanted him. My mother got him. You didn't know? Janie shook her head.
No.
Such an inadequate word.
My mother never spoke well of your father.
She wouldn't, would she? Anne leaned back against the squabs. She must have hated herself for wanting him, and him for not having her, and both of them for being happy without her.
You've thought about this a great deal, said Janie cautiously.
Anne smiled her three-cornered smile. I've had years, too. It was misery living under her roof. If it hadn't been for Bay— She broke off, her lips tightening. Speaking rapidly, she said,
It does make you wonder about love and hate, doesn't it? There are times when I hate Teddy so much that I wonder if I might love him. Strange, isn't it? Maybe I'm more like Aunt Alva than I'd thought.
No. The carriage rattled past a marble monument featuring a weeping angel.
My mother, she never questioned her own motives. What she did was right, whatever it was, and what everyone else did was wrong.
Even when it came to murder.
Do you know,
said Anne as she held out her hand for the coachman to help her out of the carriage,
you are not nearly as tedious as you used to be.
Which, Janie knew, was as close to a declaration of affection from Anne as she was likely to get. They stood together, alone in the wind, as the rector gabbled the final words over Mrs. Van Dyvel, eager to be back by his own hearth. The reporters hadn't chased them to the cemetery. Even they recognized that interments were private affairs, for the family alone. Or what was left of it. Anne's gloved hand groped for Janie's. Janie held her cousin's hand, the hills undulating around them more like a picture in a sampler than a graveyard. But for the marble monuments that dotted the landscape, angels and weeping cupids and cenotaphs and gravestones. After the babble outside the church, Greenwood felt echoingly silent. The silvery winter sunlight gave it a horrible beauty, a cold and empty beauty. Which was, Janie thought, not a bad metaphor for her mother. Alva Van Dyvel had lived her life for show, but there had been nothing at the heart of it. She had been as empty as her coffin, a monument without substance. Or maybe that was unfair. Maybe it was simply that it was easier to think of her mother as cold and empty than consumed with dark passions. Love turned to hate. Pride turned to snobbery.
"It's a relief to see her in the ground, isn't it?" murmured Anne.
"Oh, don't look so shocked. You were thinking it."
"Not in so many words."
"In other words," said Anne. "Yes. Oh, and amen." The rector closed his book of common prayer with evident relief.
"I am aware these are, difficult times," he said,
which Janie thought was a nice balance between dealing with a possible murderess and acknowledging the amounts of money said murderess had donated to the church over the years.
"If there should be any way I might be of spiritual assistance?"
Janie shook her head. Anne's eyes narrowed on something past the rector. Her face transformed into a look of extreme earnestness.
"How very kind of you!"
she said, swaying forward and taking the surprised rector's arm before he could do anything about it.
"Do you know, Father Chillingworth, my soul is riven, utterly riven, by these tragic events?"
Beyond the vicar, half hidden by an angel with breasts like bowls of custard, a man stood watching them, his dark coat blending like a shadow against the gray stone.
Yes, if you would like to make an appointment...
Anne bore the vicar inexorably away in the direction of his waiting conveyance.
"Wouldn't it be simpler if I were just to share your carriage back to the city?
I know Janie wanted to meditate over her mother's grave. Didn't you, Janie? So she won't mind in the slightest if we leave her to follow. Would you, Janie?
This is very irregular, the rector protested.
Precisely why I need to speak to you, said Anne firmly. It doesn't do to ignore one's soul. Look at the dreadful things that might happen as a consequence.
She smiled her cat's smile at Janie.
We'll just leave you to look in your own heart, shall we, darling? Now, Father Chillingworth, if you would be so good.
That was a very neat kidnapping, said Burke, stepping out from behind the weeping angel.
Well, Anne has had some practice at elopements, said Janie, speaking at random.
Burke winced. I had hoped I had lived that down.
You did. You have.
Memories surged between them. The orange-lit drawing room, Burke's arms around her. I love you. A product of circumstance and momentary madness? Or something more?
I didn't see you at the funeral.
There were enough gawkers at the gates.
Burke stayed where he was, a good yard away.
How are you?
The frost seeped through her thin shoes, better suited to the church than the graveyard. Janie managed an uneven smile. Cold. This winter. It feels as though it will never be warm again.
Burke looked at her carefully. Are we really talking about the weather?
Janie bit her lip. Possibly.
It's starting to thaw, they say.
Burke started to step forward, and then stopped, jamming his hands in his pockets.
Should I have kept quiet? Ever since the story came out, I've wished it hadn't. I feel like I've thrown you in it.
I was already in it. And I asked you to write that story, to tell the truth.
If I hadn't...
Burke gestured awkwardly at the empty spaces around them.
You might at least have had others with you today.
Do you mean toad-eaters and distant cousins who had to be bullied into dancing with me? I would as soon do without their consolation. Do you think you've wronged me?
Burke's involuntary wince gave her all the answer she needed.
Janie could feel her spine straightening, the fog falling away around her. You didn't. You did just what I asked you to do.
At a horrible and confusing time, Burke prevaricated.
Are you saying I don't know my own mind?
Burke looked around for aid. The marble angel provided none. You tell me.
I think I already have, said Janie tartly,
and found herself, despite herself, grinning back at Burke, as they both stared at each other like utter idiots. Feeling suddenly awkward, Janie cleared her throat.
I appreciated your headline yesterday. Annabelle exonerated. It made the point very nicely.
It was that or send flowers.
In a more serious tone, Burke said,
I thought it might be something to show the children someday, if people talk.
People always talk, said Janie frankly. And then, Anne is taking the children to France until the scandal blows over. She says she'll suffer Paris for their sake, even if it takes a decade or so. It might be a rather long trip. Viola is already negotiating for a new Paris doll with a complete wardrobe, and a donkey. Someone told her there were donkeys in the Tuileries garden, and she wants one for her own.
Burke went very still. Will you be going with them?
Janie looked down at the frost-blasted grass. I would like to see Paris, but not now.
Why?
Burke's breath whistled in the wind.
Why not now?
Janie stared at him, at a loss for words. I love you.
Having declared so firmly that she knew her own mind, it was rather lowering to find that she didn't.
Or rather, that knowing it, she didn't have the strength to say it. This is my home. If I leave, I want to leave on my own terms, not as an exile.
Burke quirked a brow. Janie rushed on.
In Paris, I would be only another American abroad. Here I have the chance to do something, something that matters. I know you think my work at the girls' club is silly.
I never said that. Burke grimaced. Or if I did, it was... Well, let's just say my motives weren't pure, and I was wrong.
Thank you, said Janie with dignity. She fidgeted with the strap of her reticule. There are other reasons, of course.
Yes?
Burke tried to lean casually back against the angel and missed. Oh, legal matters, babbled Janie, stalling for time. There's the house to be closed up, and my mother's estate dealt with, and Sebastian's and Viola's affairs. Someone has to stay here to put the furniture in Holland covers and sign the papers. The wind whistled between the monuments as the silence stretched between them.
So, there's nothing else that might keep you here?
Is there? Janie looked him full in the face, exhausted with pretending. And there it was, out in the open between them. I won't hold you to what you said the other night. If I was overwrought, so were you.
When you kissed me...
Burke's voice came out as a croak. He cleared his throat and tried again.
When you kissed me, was that because you wanted to, or just because you were trying to stop me embarrassing myself?
There were a dozen easy options. Extraordinary circumstances, overwrought emotions, momentary madness. Except that it wasn't momentary, and it wasn't madness. This had been building since the moment she had met him in her mother's kitchen. Janie took a deep breath, twining her fingers together. Do you really want the disgraced daughter of a cursed line?
I want you.
Burke crossed the space between them in a single step, taking her hands in his.
I want you because you're you. I don't give a tinker's damn about your line or curses. I know that in the ordinary course of things, you'd never have looked at me.
Janie looked at him, at the interesting hollows beneath his cheekbones, the green glint of his eyes. I wouldn't be so sure about that.
You know what I mean.
Burke's hands squeezed convulsively around hers.
I can only guess at what my family was. I've slept on the streets. I've stolen to feed myself. The other day when I went to turn in that article, I almost turned back— because I was afraid that the only reason I was doing it was so that I'd ruin your chances enough that you might look at me. How is that for impure motives?
He was looking at her, as though waiting for her to condemn him. Didn't you tell me yourself that nobody's motives are pure? Janie felt like a prism, fragile, but with the chance of rainbows. There were times when I wondered if I were pursuing the truth for my brother's sake— or because I liked sharing tea on trains with you.
Just the tea?
Said Burke huskily, looking at her in a way that made the temperature feel several degrees warmer. You might also have been a factor, said Janie primly. She looked helplessly at Burke, trying to find the words to describe what she felt. Not the easy romance of poetry, but something raw and real, something as tangible as the warmth of Burke's gloved hand in hers. We have known each other so little, and yet, even from that first day, it was as if all my life I had been dwelling among strangers, and finally I had met the one person who spoke in my own tongue.
I know this is not the time, said Burke. I know that you're in mourning. I've been cad enough without pressing my suit over your mother's grave. But will you give me leave to court you?
We've never done anything in the appropriate way. I expect we never shall.
Instead of it being alarming, Janie found that thought rather encouraging. She had tried appropriate, and it had given her headaches. Maybe it was time to be gloriously, fearlessly inappropriate. Within reason.
I expect you to court me properly. Ice skating, walks in the park.
Will you require a chaperone?
Inquired Burke with a hint of a grin, falling into step beside her as they began to walk towards the waiting carriage. No, said Janie decidedly. As soon as my period of mourning is over, I intend to find myself a room in a boarding house near the club and be the very model of the new woman.
You won't miss the marble halls?
Janie grimaced. I never liked the marble halls. It felt like living in a mausoleum. My only worry is...
What?
Asked Burke, and Janie could hear the concern in his voice. It was wonderful and strange to have someone care for her because he cared for her.
Are you worried about living in a boarding house? I can help you find a respectable one.
No, it's not that.
Long ago, they had promised each other honesty. Janie made a face at herself.
It sounds mad, but I keep half expecting Annabelle to walk through the door. I know I saw her in the water, but they never did find her. What if she survived?
At the look on Burke's face, she said quickly, Don't worry. I don't intend to devote my life to a doomed quest to find her.
It's just that if she does ever appear, it might be rather nice to have someone to tell her where her children are. I know it's unlikely, but it's not impossible.
They say nothing is impossible.
There was something very endearing about the effort Burke was making to see it her way.
A century ago, we would never have dreamed of buildings 20 stories tall or horseless carriages. She might have survived.
Clinging to a spar like Twelfth Night, Janie offered. Admittedly, that was a shipwreck, and this was not, so it's not quite the same.
No, not quite.
Burke held out a hand to help her into the carriage.
But stranger things have been known to happen.
Janie looked down at him, standing beside the carriage, his hand still in hers. I love you, she said.
Burke choked on a laugh. Is that so strange?
Janie found that she was laughing as well, scandalizing the marble monuments and quiet tombs. No, she said. Or if it is, it's as strange as the fact that you love me. Now come back to the house with me and have some tea.
Across the river, the golden globe of the world shone above the other buildings like a beacon, guiding them home.
This is Barry Krynick. We hope you've enjoyed this production of The English Wife by Lauren Willig. This program was produced by John Marshall Media. Text copyright 2017 by Lauren Willig. Production copyright 2017 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.